listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
All right, let me tell you about Tommy John. Men and women love Tommy John. I love my Tommy John. I'm wearing my Tommy Johns right now. Both men's and women's underwear sport a no wedgie guarantee, comfortable stay put waistbands, and fabrics that are so soft and they're designed to move with you. Dress shirts. I'm wearing the undershirt right now, and I'm wearing the underpants right now. I wore the dress shirt last time I went on Kimmel. The new Air collection for ladies, quick drying, antimicrobial fabric. No visible panty line, so good if you're wearing the yoga pants or mm-hmm. the tight-fitting dresses. All backed by the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free, guaranteed. The stuff is the best. You'll never go back to what you are currently wearing. It is Tommy John. No adjustment needed, right, Matt?
Yeah, hurry to TommyJohn.com/CarCast right now to get 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/CarCast for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/CarCast.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on. Mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you. So, I'm Adam Kroll. It's Matt, the moderator.
Hello.
DeAndrea over there. So much to get into. We were at the Long Beach Grand Prix last weekend, so news to report from that. I got a couple things to that are fresh on my mind that mm-hmm. I thought might be fun to get into. So, you guys have heard me complain slash scream about drowning over engine sounds with generic rockabilly guitar.
Yeah.
And how all that does to me is just scream hack and amateur hour. Mm-hmm. And I said, there's nothing more visceral than the sound of the engine. And I hadn't thought about that sort of bootleg film. It has sort of like, it has a lot of lore to it, which is Rendezvous. And Rendezvous was something that was shared. I guess it was filmed in Paris in 1976. And there's a lot of mystery surrounding it. And it was shared back when people shared things like, I don't know how. I don't know how my roommate Ralph in La Crescenta, California, had a bunch of Jerky Boys cassettes. You know what I mean? Like, they're in, I don't know, out of Long Island or something, or New Jersey or whatever. He had Jerky Boy cassettes.
Yeah.
You know, like in the early 90s. And we're like, I don't know. How'd you get Jerky Boy cassettes? How does this work? Like, there is no internet. How does this work? But this movie, I call it a movie. It's a, I don't know, 7-minute film of a guy going through the streets of Paris at dawn. And there's always a lot of mystery, like who drove that car? What car was it?
Mm-hmm.
Who was the filmmaker who made that, whatever? And so Pete Brock sent me an email over the weekend that said, like, they finally got some clarity on, like, who this was, who made the film. Was always, again, a lot of mystery about who was behind the wheel of the car, because the camera was mounted on the bumper of the car. So it was just the sort of point of view or the grill of the car. You could never see the car, and you could never see the driver. So and this weird little bootleg thing just sort of captured all the car nuts. Like, it was like crazy underground, you know, would have Gymkhana. Was that the Bart Connors movie?
Gymkhana was the
movie. Gymkhana is not. But you know, thing has, you know, 100 million views. This would have had 101 million views on the internet. Like, if this thing was done like they do it now, and it Ken Block style. This was sort of a Ken Block Gymkhana. Sorry. Gymkhana.
Now, what year are we talking?
76.
76.
So you're reading a letter and you didn't hear me. Back to the Groundlings for you. So this was 76, And this would have blown up the internet, but there was no internet. But still, people found a way to, like, share it. Like, I think the first time I saw it would have probably been around, like, 1998, and someone just had on a VHS tape. Okay. And they just popped it in, and we just watched it. But turn the sound up, Maxipata, if you have it, and we'll play. I'll just play 30 seconds of it, and you'll get the gist of it. A little disappointed that Moderator didn't know Rendezvous just by title. So they're just going up an on-ramp, and they're going down the Champs-Élysées to the Arc de Triomphe. But listen to the sound. Or whatever the hell it is. I don't know. We're heading toward the Arc de Triomphe, which I've been on. Kind of cool. And listen, coming up in the next 10 seconds, on how much motor sound there is as he heads to the square. He has to, like, downshift. And
yeah, he's just miss. Going straight right now, and he's going to start getting
right.
Some turns.
All right, turn it up next. So Pete went on. You can bring it down. Sorry. So the Pete went on to say in this.
Wow.
All right. So everyone kind of thought, all right, we don't know if it's a Formula One driver. We don't know who's driving. But it must be. We know it's a Ferrari Daytona. We know that's a V12 Daytona sound. And everyone knows that sound. Anyone who's seen Gone in 60 Seconds. Peak RPM of 4,400. Is he getting out of the pits?
Yeah.
No, like, no. It will sound straight. Oh, so Enzo Ferrari called him and told him to back off so they could have a 1-2-3 finish? No, peak horsepower. Peak RPM. Yeah, it's great. It's in my annals of great bad car scenes. So everyone said, well, it's a Ferrari. Daytona, and it sounds like it's got like the air cleaners off or whatever, maybe a racing, you know, racing trim, whatever. So Pete sent me this email that said, you know, they finally got to the bottom of this stuff. I don't know if Max Pata has access to it.
Yeah, I have it here. So one scene, one take, no dialogue, no chase, no hero car or driver in sight, yet Claude Lelouch's hypnotic electrifying C'était un Rendezvous is one of the best car films of all time. For years, its creation was shrouded in mystery. No one knew how it had been made, what kind of car the film featured, or who was behind the wheel. Its backstory was embellished, even fabricated, and it took on mythic proportions. Since its 1976 debut, Rendezvous has rightfully become a legend. And Haggerty posted an article getting to the bottom of all of it.
Now, read down on it, because it explains who the driver was and what the camera car was. And that's what I found so interesting. But it's also what made me march into Nate's office this morning and go, would you watch this? Watch this. Had a funny discussion. I was like, I want this. And I want the guy who's editing Adam Carolla Goes Racing. I want him in here, too. And he goes, well, that's Doug.
Yeah.
And I said, all right, get Doug in this office, and I want to watch this with the both of you. And he went, Doug had to go home. And I said, what happened to Doug? He spilled bleach on himself.
What?
Well, let me tell you how I'm wired. I'm like, he had to go home because he spilled bleach on himself? And he went, he was cleaning the bathroom. And I went, okay.
Yeah.
I'm now done with Doug. I'm not sure why. Maybe those Nigerian brothers jumped him when he was walking out of the bathroom. Is that Max Patty? You look like you're in deep thought.
Oh, I'm just reading the article.
Okay. Here. Well, doesn't it have a? Yeah, read that.
Yeah.
Part.
So the long-standing belief that Rendezvous featured a Ferrari only fed rumors that race car driver Jacques Lafitte had been behind the wheel and reached speeds of 200 miles per hour, but Lelouch drove the car himself, the filmmaker, his own Mercedes-Benz 450 SEL.
All right, hold on.
Yeah.
450 SEL is oftentimes an automatic.
Yeah.
Back then, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. The 76. I mean, the 76, by the time they got to the 76.
Look at this.
Wait, 76 SEL, did you say?
450 SEL. Oh, 76 right. Was the year came out, but.
Yeah, oh, he's driving his own SEL. I mean, that's a. There's the SL.
Yeah.
That's the two door, but I'm not sure if the SEL is the two door sports car, maybe a European version or something like that. The point is that Mercedes has no sound like this at all. And the reality is he probably wasn't even moving that fast. He's probably just, he's driving a sedan.
Yeah.
He's driving a four-door Mercedes. My grandmother had a Mercedes. Like, it's got a weird diesel-y sound. Mercedes have a weird diesel-y sound, and they did. That thing, would that thing have a straight six in it? Well, we'll figure it out. Either way, he was driving that in a good clip, but not any different. Like, there was a part or two where he, like, passed the guy on the straightaway.
Yeah.
And that guy, presumably the guy he passed, is driving like a bone stock LeCar, right?
Yeah.
That guy must have been going 40, 45 miles an hour. And when he passed him, it looked like when you're on the freeway and one guy's going 50 and the other guy's doing 80.
Yeah.
But not 200. Like, the point is I think this guy just got into a Mercedes four door, put the camera on the bumper, took a spirited drive.
Yeah.
And is probably automatic, took a spirited drive, and then laid over this Ferrari.
Yeah.
And turned it into a totally different thing.
Now I kind of want to go back and see it again. Does it seem like he sped it up?
No.
Or does it?
He didn't
it's
speed
just,
it. Let
it's
him,
just the engine sounds
sorry.
Alone make
yes!
it sound like.
Yes!
Yeah.
Go ahead and read it.
All right. So what happened was he dubbed in the sound of the Ferrari 275 GTB after the fact. And then he opted for the Mercedes because of the hydropneumatic suspension, which cushioned the camera, which made it smooth. And then he added all the squealing tires and engine and shifting gear to make it sound more exciting than his car. There are no camera tricks in this film. He really reached speeds up to 142 miles per hour.
I don't think he got going that fast in that car.
Maybe that one long straightaway. I just don't know how it's
happening. No.
His cinematographer and key grip sat in the car with him, handling a remote to control the camera's focus and aperture. He also had a spotter, an assistant who was supposed to let him know whether there was traffic or pedestrians as he exited.
All right.
Pretty crazy.
That's how would they communicate with him? Like, what sort of signals?
Walkie-talkie. He had a walkie-talkie, but the guy's walkie-talkie broke, so he wasn't able to.
Yeah. He credits the cinema gods with helping him get the film in one take. He had just one chance, and against all odds, he succeeded.
Right. Well, it's the world's greatest achievement in sound editing now.
Yeah.
It's like...
Watch it. I mean, you can see he's downshifting and upshifting and stuff, but the bumper never moves.
Yeah.
Like, watch him go through the town square again. You'll see all this downshifting and upshifting and braking and stuff. But a car of that era, especially, even a Ferrari, when you brake hard or you upshift, you're going to rock back and rock forward, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead. Let's see it. Is this going to the Champs-Élysées? Or the Arc de Triomphe, sorry. He's going for a double down here. There's never any hiccups.
No, and not a lot of body roll.
Yeah. He's not passing the cars at that great a speed.
Right. Like this car
he's coming
up on
a guy who's going 30. Like he's coming up on guys that are going 35 miles an hour, 40 miles an hour, and he's still it's kind of coming up on him, but he's not. If you're going 150, you're blowing past these guys. All right. All right. So it's all engine sound.
It's all engine sound.
All right. We should take this and put generic rock guitar over it and see what it looks like.
I bet it would look like the slowest street race ever.
Most boring. It would have never gone viral.
No.
All right.
It's amazing how just the sound changes everything.
All right, Max Pata. Now, who are you going to agree with then?
That's great. Just that's the great sound, the throatiness. It's exciting.
But what? But
there's tension.
But it'd be better if we had generic ZZ Top, right?
I was never a fan of the generic rock.
All right. Well, just for fun, we'll put stupid generic rock underneath that and see what it looks
all this
like.
Other work is too much work, apparently.
All right. Let me tell you about Xibar before we get too deep into this. CarCast brought to you by Xibar for better engine performance, horsepower and fuel economy, and lower underhood temperatures. Xibar is the ultra-thin, high-temperature coating, reduces radiant heat by 90%. You learn more at Zycoat.com. That is Zycoat.com. Yeah, so I was talking to Nate. I was like,
the importance of sound?
I was like, oh, we got it. Well, you know, it's funny. I was like, Nate, I was telling him, like, and when we do these, you know, going racing car things, you know, we do the auctions. We got to get the car right with the money, with the total. And he was like, that was just a trailer just to let people know you're at the auction, you know? And I was like, okay, but it still seems like we sold that car for 220 grand. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, but it's just a snippet to let people know you're at the thing. And I just said, look, do we have the footage of the car that was sold at auction?
Yeah.
And he's like, yes. And I'm like, as long as we have that footage, then let's use that footage.
And it's more work to do it the way he did it. And I would even argue the same thing on the sound, because this clip we just saw was a guy who recorded engine sounds and edited it together. When you say, hey, I'm doing the hill climb of the 935, play the engine sound, this doesn't mean go to the shop and fire up the car and record the sound. It means just play what you recorded. You got the sound while in the car, and it's
and
fantastic.
Heat it up. Yes.
Yeah, just no music.
Well, what I'm saying is to you and Max Zapata, the sound of the Mercedes, would that be enhanced? Would this experience be enhanced on the movie Rendezvous, if we took the Ferrari and we moved it, we turned the knob from 10 down to 3 and then laid over rock music over the top of it?
No, this wouldn't be anything. With
it would be nothing.
It'd be nothing.
Okay.
We wouldn't be having the conversation.
Well, now we have our answer, people. We have our answer.
Yeah.
All right. we just got back from the... Max Pat's going to try to do this. I'm curious what this will do to our brain.
Oh, it's going to ruin my day. Go ahead. See if you can do it.
Like, would you get a GoPro and put on your
It really doesn't look fast anymore.
Feels a lot slower.
So
even with how fast this song is,
you put a GoPro on your moped and went around Paris?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's barely moving now, right?
Right.
And this is look, he's catching his car. How much slower he is catching his cars?
Yeah. That car off into the distance now with the red lights in the back, just
that
trying
guy's
to get
like
it, trying to get it, trying to get it, trying to get it.
Yeah. All right. Well, I just, you guys, we just underwent an interesting little thought experiment here, didn't we?
Yeah.
Guess who was right. All right. Interesting. We'll put that up on carcastshow.com. It's kind of a funny thing. And Max Pat, I know you were shorthanded back there, but we should even pick a less... paced rock song.
That was just the first one I found.
Yeah, I know.
We could find something
a little slower. Find one that's slower
good
paced
idea,
and
though.
See what it does.
Yeah, good idea.
It's not his idea. It was my idea.
Well, that's what I said. Good idea.
Yeah, you're saying it
don't
to you,
look
yeah.
Don't look.
Don't look at
you look at me or you look at the ground.
Yeah. You never look at me.
Can
when
we
you
turn
say
those
that?
Lights off?
No, I didn't. It wasn't even really an idea. It was just something that kept going and it led me to this place. But if we find our generic rock. Anyway.
We're going to have to go to the Long Beach Grand Prix and just wear like Bose noise-canceling headphones that play some music instead of the actual racing and see if any of those cars go by fast.
Everything slows way
everything
down.
Everything slows way down.
We went to Long Beach Grand Prix. We got to hang out. The stadium truck race is the best.
It's so much fun.
It is the best. We saw the GTO IMSA cars going. Our new friend, Craig Bennett from Michigan was driving the 1990 Nissan 300ZX, a Clayton Cunningham car, and he basically just led start to finish. That car's insane. And
man, that car looks so cool out there, and he did such a great job.
Yeah.
It's great to talk to him.
That car is very fast, and I mean, to be fair to everyone in the field, I was told that car's putting down 850 to the rear wheels, which means 1,000 horsepower, and that's a lot. I mean, you know, you're dealing with, you know, Ford Mustangs and Camaros and Pontiac Firebirds and Roush Mustangs and Oldsmobile Cutlass and like that stuff, but that stuff is... I mean, you have a really well-built V8, and you're putting out about 735 or 750, like on a really nicely built. I mean, I know like that C7R Vet I had 850. That's like a NASCAR engine. I mean, I don't know. So you're probably... some of these guys who are driving a Roush Mustang, I'm guessing you're knocking on the door of 800 horsepower.
I'm sure they are.
But
and these are all pretty freshened up. We talked to
some of those cars look really good.
Yeah, yeah.
They're
not necessarily using all the old technology. They got some pretty modern stuff going on, the engine, computers.
That Nissan. I don't know what the Nissan has in terms of weight. It's probably got another 100 horsepower on it than a Roush Mustang, and it's maybe it's 100 pounds lighter. I don't know. But either way, these guys were out there getting it, and it was a great field. And sorry.
We got the results printed out. We're looking at
and I was like, oh, we saw Les down there. And I was like, oh, Les is down there. And I was like, what are you doing, Les? He's like, I got my Oldsmobile Cutlass out here. And it's like, oh, who's driving it? And he's like, Bruce something. And I'm like, oh, okay. And Matt handed me this finishing list. I was just looking down it, just like, oh, yeah, that's good. Craig came in number one. He did a 124 lap. Our friend Martin Lauber came in and at like 11th or 12th place. And he did like... he did like a 134 and blah, blah, blah. And I just sort of glanced at the bottom and I saw 154. And I was like, oh, what? 154? And then I looked over and it's like Oldsmobile Cutlass. And I'm like, Vista, California. And I'm like, oh,
yeah.
Far be it for me to make fun of anybody, but it says lap number one. I don't know. Oh, and I think he probably had to pull out of there, but a little bit off the pace.
Yeah. And in practice, they did two or three laps.
The thing that was funny, here's an interesting, kind of an interesting thing. The guy, the big tall guy in the Chevy Beretta that I thought was the same as Tommy Kendall's Chevy Beretta,
because
it kind of was, he had the second fastest lap at 124.8, which is right. No one else is in 124 but Craig. So... that guy was moving in that Beretta, and that Beretta was nice.
That thing was cool.
I mean, it was really well done.
You guys have to see this thing because he was so set back. He's such a tall guy that he was sitting like behind the B pillar.
Yeah.
Like if you got in the door and then you didn't get into the front of the seat, it was like it was pretty far back, and the steering column was...
Yeah. I mean, this guy must have been 6'4 and change.
Yeah.
And he was a big guy. And this thing's way back, but he could drive that car. And I guess something broke on it or something. But that was cool. You don't see many Berettas. You see tons of Mustangs and a lot of Capris and Firebirds. And they had the Diatli. So I became very familiar with the Diatli race team and the Camaros they were racing because Willie T. raced a Camaro for Diatli, and they had a couple of the Diatli had the Hobbs, David Hobbs one out there, too. Very interesting. I had a long talk on Sunday, fresh off the hot Grand Prix. I was, my mom and my stepdad came over.
Yeah.
And we had one of our annuals sit down and talk about nothing.
Oh, you didn't watch the Indy race?
Nah. Talk about nothing discussions. But Max Pettit, just for fun, just because I want to blow the moderator's mind.
Mm-hmm.
VW Squareback, Volkswagen VW Squareback, which was kind of my mom's predominant ride. My stepdad, who's socially pretty awkward, is kind of a wrencher. And he used to have to work on my mom's car all the time. And he was explaining to me that when he popped the hood, of course, the hood is not where the engine is in that car. It's in the back. It's inside the car, really.
Yeah.
But the hood, when he popped it, is where the spare and the wiper motor and the wiper spray and all that reservoir and everything is. He said he was like shocked and appalled when he learned that the wiper spray was propelled by the air in the spare tire. And I was like, oh, yeah. Like, I remember hearing that once or him saying it once, but still being like, what? Like, that weird conceit.
Yeah.
Like, and it was like, well, don't you run the air out of your spare? And it's like, well, you have to fill it up, like occasionally. And it was like, God damn. I mean, how cheap do you have to be? But are there other cars that do that?
If you blow a spare due to bad weather, you're really screwed because now, now you've got a flat spare and you need it.
Right.
And either going to clean the windows or not.
So we sat.
It's a task, too. It's like,
you got to like unscrew something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, so we sat and we talked about my mom's VW Squareback for an extended period of time. Super long. That's all we did was talk about her VW Squareback for a super long time, which is weird. And the whole time I was thinking, I got an air-cooled car.
Yeah.
It's more valuable, maybe twice as valuable as a VW Squareback.
Maybe.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to... Not exactly, but close enough.
I mean, like, just for the sake of discussion.
We'll round up. Yeah. So I was like, it is, but it perfectly encapsulated my relationship because we are sitting here doing a deep dive on your $2,000 car from 1974. And we just kept talking and talking about it. Eventually we got into like what's going on with their house and their 1,100 square foot house and blah, blah, blah. But we never talked about anything fun or interesting or cool. And again, like I'm always, it's always funny.
They came over to you or you went there?
Oh, they come over to me. I can't. I'm not going into their house.
And they didn't want to talk about the house?
Oh, they always, they'll say like, oh, this looks good for having a party or something. But they keep it pretty generic. But I realized like the whole point is to talk about nothing. So we just talk about nothing. But this time we really talked about nothing. It was weird. And then every once in a while they'll go, like if they say, so what are you doing? I go, I make documentaries and I, you know, do car stuff, do some car races and do some documentaries. And they go, okay. But they never go like, what is the car race?
Yeah, or what's the documentary about? What kind of movies are you making?
No, we never get into that part. We just get into the part where you're generically talking about what you're doing. Did you find how that mechanism works?
Yeah, it's just it's really popular in Beatles. Beatles did it, too. Yeah.
Oh, Beatles did it, too.
Yeah, and just they use air pressure from the spare tire. So the spare is actually purposely overinflated to accommodate this function when you get the car. But yeah, there's a valve coming from the tire that's what would power the windshield washers.
That's interesting.
It's sort of like
is it hooked up all the time?
Yes.
And then,
I don't.
And then if you use a spare, you got to unplug it.
You must have to undo it. I mean, they must have some sort of finger. You know, some sort of knurled finger thing or something.
How does that not leak?
Oh, you know it's got to leak.
It's got to be leaking all the time.
And I guess like the valve would go into the steering column before even getting to the windshield. So like if the plastic of the valve really deteriorated, your lap would have windshield fluid on it.
I like the MacGyver-esque sense of the whole thing, but I would argue that just add another $7 to the price of your car and put a pump in there.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. All right. Tell us a little about Geico, and then I got some more for you.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got Geico. Everybody's got this to-do list. You drop off your dry cleaning, you pick up some milk, and now you can save hundreds of dollars to that list, and you don't have to pick up or drop off anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. So if you want some extra money in your pocket, this is the most rewarding to-do you can do today. Be sure to check out geico.com.
We had this funny thing, which we had we got to go up into the Acura hospitality suite and hang out. And there's one super drunk guy there.
Oh, yeah.
And this drunk guy, he was lit, which I don't judge. And he's a nice guy. I think we met him at some other event.
Yeah.
He just
had a couple of cocktails.
He's fine. But he had a Seabreeze or something. He had like a cranberry and vodka, and it was up to the top of the edge. And he wouldn't take a sip off it.
He threatened to. Like, he put it to his mouth a couple times and just went away.
So, like, you're sitting, and he's standing over you, and he's talking the whole time, and he's getting animated, and he's holding this drink. And all I could do was stare at the drink because he was going to spill it in my lap.
That's it.
He was going to spill it. He was just holding it and talking and holding it. And I just kept looking at the drink going, like, and he wouldn't set it down. He wouldn't set it down. He wouldn't take a sip of it. He just kept holding it.
He was kind of a close talker.
He was a close talker, which I don't mind. I don't have personal space. But he was a close talker, and he had this cranberry drink, and it was just like, and I was just like, you're drunk as hell. Take a hit off that thing, would you? Or I'll take a hit off
it. Just pour a little bit out. And you were like sitting on the stool, at one of the high top tables, and he was standing next to you, and I see you just keep dodging your knees and legs out of the way because you're like, where's he going to go with this? Then after he was talking to me as well, I thought he was doing the same thing. I got a couple pictures of him doing it, and then he goes and talks to the girl that he was like his friend or worked with or something, and 9 seconds into the conversation, he spills it all over her feet and his feet.
Oh, good.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was on his hand, and he's shaking his hand, and he's like, yeah. I was like, I don't know how you dodged it for 19 minutes, and he was 9 seconds into that conversation with the girl, and both of their boots are covered in I don't know, sea breeze or vodka crayons or something.
Also, I got something else that happened there is I am very liberal with my phone. I don't have a security code on my phone, and I tend to leave my phone on top of tables when I've decided the place is safe. I don't like this brick in my pocket. I just leave it on the table, and then I know where it is. And then at some point we're leaving, and I was like, where's my phone? And then we went to the table and it's gone, and it's like, what happened to my phone? And somebody had collected it and sent it to Lost and Found, although we were never more than 5 feet from the table.
Right. It was the suites are set up like each sponsor has their own little double door. So we were with Acura. And they only sit a handful of people there. We were standing next to it.
So remember when we went to Burbank and I put my backpack down and somebody just took my backpack?
Yep.
I don't mind the security part, although it's a little weird that the backpack already went through security. Yeah. So I don't know what it could pose, but I just mind the part where you don't walk to the front of the group and go, is this somebody's backpack?
Right.
Like, if my back is turned to you and I'm standing 4 feet from a table and my phone is on it and you come up behind me and take the... It's the exact same thing happened at Burbank Airport, which is we're all watching the sports bar TV sets. Anyone who knows the Burbank Airport knows.
Yeah, yeah.
We're all facing this way. My backpack is 5 feet behind me on the ground. Security guy comes up behind me, picks it up, and turns around and walks back. So... I'm not
sneaking by.
Not like I'm ever going to see him go past with the bag. And then I turn around and the bag's gone.
Yeah.
So I don't mind you taking the bag or the phone, but you have to
make an announcement.
You have to say to people, is this somebody's phone?
Yeah.
In which case, whatever. And then later on, after you've taken my phone, please don't announce, we found your phone. Like, oh, you lost your phone? There's like a lot of that. I'm like, no. Did not leave. I didn't lose my phone. I set my phone on a table.
That's exactly what I went back to see.
Somebody took my phone.
I was thinking about this too. What about the, you didn't tell anybody. You didn't tell any of the staff who were working that hospitality. Because we asked the waiters, we asked the bartenders, like the people that you would go to first. Right. And nobody knew. They're like, I don't know. They didn't know. And they actually checked. They looked around. They talked to some people. Like, they put an effort into it. So if you're going to go and take, hey, I'm going to swipe somebody's phone because I think they're gone, why not hit up a few staff and go, hey, do you know whose phone this is? Do you know whose phone this is? Should I put it in lost and found? If you hear from somebody, if somebody asks you, tell me. And
yes,
they didn't do it.
It'd be nice.
By the way, you missed lunch on Sunday. Saturday we got there. Lunch ended at 2. We got there 2:01.
Yeah, they were putting everything away when we got there.
So Sunday I was like, it's 11. I was like, we need to get there to get this lunch. It was lobster and steak. We had track lobster. We had track lobster.
How was it?
It was fantastic.
Oh,
it was
man.
Good. Plus the price is right.
Oh, yeah.
I'll tell you guys about Castrol Edge. You know, Castrol Edge is stronger under pressure. Engines can lose up to 10% of performance due to friction, and Castrol Edge with fluid titanium transforms under this pressure to keep metal apart and fight power-robbing friction to unlock exhilarating performance. It's 3 times stronger than the leading full synthetic against viscosity breakdown per the Kurt Orban test. Is it Orban? I want to say Orban.
I always say Orban.
Orban. Test in the 5W30 vis grade. Interesting. I want to say Orban.
So, yeah.
Castrol Edge formula always exceeds toughest industry standards by new and improved formula that incorporates the latest technology that makes it transform to the strongest when pressure is highest. So check out Castrol Edge.
All right. So we saw some really cool cars. We saw the Steve Millen car, chassis 02, that won the won the race. The 04 chassis we're excited to go see, but the guy had a little ding up during qualifying or practice or something and had to put it in his trailer and took it home, right?
And then he did. And then Sunday, by the way, I went over and spoke to Simon Pagenaud. He's such a nice guy, Indy driver. And, you know, he reached out. He said, come by, make sure you see me. I said, thank you. And went over there and got into his paddock and walked us through the car. And it's funny because the cars are just kind of out there to see. But when the bodies are removed, they don't want you to take any pictures. They're like, well, technically, the suspension is proprietary, so we don't want you to see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I chatted with him, and we're going to have him come back in at some point and do a CarCast with us because it's been a while since he's been in.
Yeah.
And I was talking to him. I was like, hey, are you doing any sports car racing as well? And he said, yeah, I am for Acura. And he goes, it's really weird. He goes, because I'm driving for the Penske team here, Chevy-powered engines, and somehow they all let me go drive Acura sports cars as well. I was like, well, if you're the nicest guy here, Simon, like, they all want you on the team. They want you to do stuff. So he's doing a bit of that. He's getting he's always behind the wheel, and he's a car guy, so he's having a lot of fun. And then after that, we went over to Graham Rahal's paddock, and I sat down with Bobby Rahal and chatted for a little while. And then in Bobby Rahal fashion, he just whipped out his phone and started going through Apple computer livery Porsche images. And he's like, you know, I tell you about this, and then I tell you about this, and he's like, this is the livery. And we have the storyboard in the shop with the Apple computer livery car, and there's the two versions with the slightly different number on it.
Yeah.
There's like the italicized number 9 that Dave Merrick likes, and then there's the straight up numbers. Mm-hmm. He's all in on the italicized 9.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the better looking one, and he's all in on that one.
Well, it's a good or interesting sign when your car, and I saw this in a tweet where it's like someone was asking about our 300ZX, and we have the only Clayton Cunningham car that's a naturally aspirated Infiniti V8. Everyone else has that
the turbo,
the twin turbo 6, which is a really cool piece. But we have the last iteration. And when you come back and you go like, no, that was a 75 car and that was a 76 car. They all ran 75 or 76 and they just toggled back and forth. So it's kind of hard to figure out which car was which via the number. I'll tell you, they're little things. And so some of those cars ran 1, 75, and 76. So when you get the car, theoretically, and you're restoring the car, any race car, you have to kind of make a decision like, well, where? And I think the conceit is, well, when it won Daytona, this is its livery. Or when it won Le Mans, this was its livery. Like, I think you pick its best win or brightest hour and just put it into that livery. Yeah. So it's the decision will be made by like the car gods, because they'll go, well, what was it when it won its biggest race? And that's where we'll put it. The number will be put in. But there's also little things with like the turbos versus the naturally aspirated versus the different years, like little things. I've seen it in my Newman cars. I've seen it with the Oldsmobile Cutlass. Like, some have the exhaust in the back. Some the exhaust, some is a double coming out of one side. Some is a single on each side. Yeah. Some is just one on one side. Or actually, that doesn't exist. I made that one up. The 300ZX, some have the exhaust right off the front wheel, like the turbo style.
Yeah.
The others, like mine, have the exhaust move back behind the B-pillar, which always looks a little better. Yeah. Then there's the turbo one that has it move back, but then there's the turbo one that has it move forward. Like, it's kind of all over the road.
Yeah.
But it'll help little things like that, and lug patterns or lug versus patterns, center lock.
And when you look at photos and you try to look at the like crossbars and stuff for the roll cage, you can kind of see – like, oh, this guy runs a B-pillar bar. This guy doesn't run a B-pillar bar.
Right.
Or later ones did, and the earlier ones didn't. It was interesting to do, and talking to Bobby Rahal, and I was telling him, like, oh, we got a 79 911 tub. We're going to be recreating that car, and he's super interested in seeing that.
The Whistler Mustang was there, which we always like.
Yeah, like that.
The Motorcraft Mustang was there, which we always like.
The dark blue Motorcraft one.
Yeah, that one. That's the one that locked up and took the 3.5 Batmobile into the wall.
We've had a million conversations about that one. And then I was like, we walked up in that car, the blue one. We're like, oh, this looks really good. We're like, oh, yeah, they must have just finished it.
No, it was they had it fixed, because that 3.5 came back. Hans Stuck car, blah, blah, blah. I always say, the wisdom of the hill and the start-finish line. Mm-hmm. There's a couple racetracks that have that. And the wisdom of everybody who's up front has crested the hill, seen that a 935 has blown up a turbo and is spitting like parts and oil on the track. Everyone, all those people start slowing down.
Yeah.
Everybody in the back is on it.
Yeah.
And then when they come over the hill, that's when they can discover that no one else is racing in front of them.
Yeah.
And then it's quick decision time on cold brakes and cold tires. Yeah. And if they just did that front straightaway in such a way where you could see all the way down it, I don't think the guys in behind would be charging.
Maybe that's what the spotter's for.
Yeah, let me tell you about the spotter, and they don't have spotters, or if they did, you couldn't hear them because you'd be on full throttle there. The flag guys are for that, but let me tell you something. Flag guys, you miss the first flag offering. It's the second and third, you see. On the straightaway, everyone's just on it with tunnel vision. That yellow flag comes out on the straight. People see the next flag station.
Yeah.
It's not the first one. All right. Let me tell you about Zybar ultra thin coating for manifolds, headers, turbos. Oh yeah, turbos, tailpipes. They just take the turbo part and do the whole housing, huh?
Yeah.
Interesting. Mufflers and tips, thickness of 0.001 inch, reduces radiant heat by 90%. The first DIY thermal coating for your car of its kind. That can apply Zybar yourself. They have there's a video and a written step-by-step instructions at Zycoat.com. There's three awesome colors. They got bronze, midnight black, and cast silver. I think they'll mix you up a custom color as well if you want to go down that road. It's available at Zycoat.com and auto part locations like AutoZone. CarCast listeners get 15% off plus free shipping on online orders. Just enter promo code CARCAST when you buy Zycoat.com. This stuff is the real deal, people. If you're into performance, check it out. Zycoat.com takes that heat off, man. Hey, me, San Francisco, tonight, Cobb's Comedy Club. Tonight, two shows. Come on out. And then also tomorrow night as well. Friday, Saturday night. So check that out, 19th and 20th. Also, not Taco Bell material available for rent or purchase at Chassis and Amazon and iTunes. Thank you. Leave a review. We appreciate it. Sacramento, Thunder Valley Resort and Casino. Get rid of those casino bucks, Max Spada. That'll be next Friday. I'll be up on stage doing stand-up there. Adam Carolla Goes Racing. You can download at Vero. And watch us at Monterey, driving Newman's GT1 championship car. First time that thing's been on the track since 85, 86.
Yeah.
Shift and Steer. Let's not forget the Motorator, man.
Thank you. I'll
check that out.
New York Auto Show, and I'll bring back that interview with the GTR and Z guy and Pete Brock.
Hiroshi Tamura.
Yeah.
He's the chief product specialist, and Pete Brock over there as well.
Yep.
I love that. Ask him about that rendezvous video. So until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Matt the Motorator DeAndrea saying keep the air in the spare and the windshield wiper pump.
Yeah.
and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.